This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today. If there's one thing you can say about being in lockdown, it's that it gives you time to dream. It gives you time to think about where in the world you miss and what you long to do there. It gives you time to consider your priorities, time to plan something big. The question all travelers around the world must surely be considering right now is, where to next? Where are you going to go as soon as this global lockdown is over? As soon as the world is made right again, where are you aching to visit? Will it be somewhere close or somewhere far? Somewhere old or somewhere new? Somewhere safe or somewhere wild? For every person, the answer will be slightly different. The thing we have in common is the desire to travel and the time to consider the destination. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're going to cast ahead to a time AC, after coronavirus. We're going to consider where we want to go first when the world reopens. What do we want to do? What do we want to experience? How do we plan to get back into the groove? Joining me to share their hopes and dreams are two passionate travellers who are itching to get back out there. First up, he's a writer for traveller.com.au, whose heart lies in South America, despite the fact his body currently resides in inner city Sydney, Rob McFarlane. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Ben. How are you going?
Very well, thanks, mate. Thank you for joining us. Also with us, she's the Australia-New Zealand Managing Director of Intrepid Travel and someone who plans to get back to working on her bucket list as soon as possible, Sarah Clark. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Ben. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Now, guys, has this hibernation, you know, has it given you time to think about your next journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you have this amount of time to kind of reflect on everything, it makes you prioritize things and I guess put perspective on life as well. So yeah, absolutely. A lot of thinking time.
Yeah. What about you, Rob? Are you itching to get back out there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I sort of heard an interesting thing on the, I think it was on the radio the other day about how different your attitude to this would be if you'd chosen to spend this time at home to sort of regroup and have a pause and rethink about things rather than it being enforced. And so I'm trying to sort of do that and try and change my mindset a bit to what we're going through right now and use it as an opportunity to, yeah, come up with some places that I really want to get back to.
Yeah. What do you take into account when you're thinking about that next place? So, you know, are you thinking about safety? Are you thinking about revisiting somewhere you'd loved or going somewhere totally new?
I think safety will be an issue. I mean, there'll be a whole bunch of logistical constraints initially in terms of where you can physically get to. And so I'm sure we'll see a sort of a staged opening up of things. And so realistically, Australia and potentially New Zealand's going to be sort of top of the list. But I do think safety will be an issue. I mean, New York's probably my favorite city in the world, but it's having a really tough time right now. And so depending on how that goes, that's certainly going to be a factor in terms of whether, you know, I choose to go back there. And so I think it'd be hard for this not to be a factor in your travel decisions going forward.
Yeah. What about you, Sarah? What are you taking into consideration when you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's all the unknown as to how the world and different country borders will open up again. I think, as Rob mentioned, the logistics piece. So, you know, what the flight routes are going to be and where we can actually fly to. I think, you know, safety is always top of mind, but I'm just really keen to get back out there and kind of keep learning new things about different cultures and, you know, seeing new parts of the world again.
Yeah. Is it safe to assume that domestic travel is going to kick off first?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that will be because we won't be able to actually leave the country yet. So I think it's going to start hyper-local. It'll start in your area immediately and then it will open up into that intrastate and interstate travel across Australia. And everyone keeps talking about this Tasman bubble. So I think New Zealand will be the exotic destination for us all.
Yeah, for sure. Rob, do you think that maybe we should be considering where we can help out in terms of taking tourism dollars back to places that have been so hard hit by this? You know, I'm thinking about places like Italy, places like Spain that rely so much on tourism and yet have struggled so much. Is that something you think people should be taking into consideration?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what those destinations do about that, because they would appreciate that there's going to be a perception issue in terms of going back to those places that have been really hard hit. So I'd imagine for them it would be a priority to sort of prove that they're safe to go back. And so I'd like to think that was a factor. I don't know. I think people will still have their bucket list places, and they will still... and this will probably sort of focus those lists, and they'll still want to go back to the places they really want to. I think it'd be more a case of how those destinations position themselves going forward to say, listen, we're open for business again. We really need your business, and don't worry, it's safe.
Yeah. What's your feeling on that, Sarah?
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of Rob's points there. And it will be interesting to see places like Italy or New York City. I mean, they may actually open up earlier than other places because they have sort of seen that peak and, you know, had the virus. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they actually open up earlier. But I think Australians may be a little bit less confident in going to those places to start with, unless it's one of their bucket list items or areas. But in the, you know, the likes of Italy, you'll see domestic travel within Europe kind of open up first, as opposed to Australians going there. Or with New York City, you'll see Americans going there first, and then international travelers coming back, I think.
Yeah, so certainly for me, I've been living in Spain for the last year in San Sebastian, and I thought when we left there, I won't be back here for a long time. Like, why would you go back to a place that you've spent a year in already? But now, ever since being grounded, it feels really important to me now to get back there whenever I can to sort of support the friends that I made. You know, I know so many people there who run restaurants who are just, you know, who can't open and who are struggling so much and who depend so much on the tourist dollar. You know, so many personal connections and so many people that I know who are affected. And so for me, it feels like that's now a really high priority of mine to try and get back there and help out in whatever small way I can, really.
But I actually think Sarah's made a really good point there, in as much as I think that sort of deficit of international tourists hopefully will be made up initially by domestic tourists, because let's face it, there'll be a whole bunch of people in Spain who might ordinarily have gone to, say, New York, who are now going to look at places like San Sebastian in the same way that we're going to look internally. So you may find that helps to sort of ease destinations back into it, and then international tourists will start to come on board later. And so they may not experience that real deficit that, you know, that I guess we're fearing. But, you know, it remains to be seen how that pans out.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right about that. Absolutely. I think that will be made up and as it will in Australia, which is going to be a great thing, I think, for locals to get out and explore our own backyard. But I guess seeing family is going to be a pretty big priority, isn't it, once people can get back out there? Because so many people have relatives overseas that they can't currently see at the moment. Robert, I know you're one of those people.
Absolutely. I literally should have been leaving today to start a 5-month trip through Central America, South America, the US, and then to the UK. So every year I go to the UK and Europe for 2 to 3 months. And that's a big part of my annual travels. And like, my mum's over there, I've got two brothers over there. And so I'm really feeling that at the moment, you know, as they are. They've sort of got used to me sort of landing on their shores for the summer. And so I think that would definitely be a priority, as well as bucket lists, in terms of where family is and trying to get back to see them as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think I don't necessarily have family overseas, but lots of friends. And I think when you're told you can't go there, it makes you want to go there even more. So I think people will, yeah, definitely want to kind of get back and see friends and family as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this whole lockdown hibernation that we've had to go into, it makes those personal relationships so much more important. And I think there's going to be a real will for people to get out there and reestablish those human connections, you know, those face-to-face connections that we're not able to have, as we are not able to have right now, given we're all talking to each other on a computer screen.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you think about all the people who've been doing, you know, various chats over, you know, online services, and how great those first meetups are going to be when you've had, I was in Sri Lanka recently, and so I've been having this sort of regular catch up with a couple of other travelers who were there, and that was right just before the lockdown started. So I came in the day after the mandatory quarantine, and so we've been having a weekly catch up, and all we keep talking about is this first time that we're going to meet up in London, and the first curry we're going to have, and the first beer we're going to have. So there's going to be a lot of those reunions, isn't there, around the world?
Yeah, I have this picture in my head of everyone emerging at the end of their driveways and just going out and embracing their neighbours and stuff, which I'm pretty sure we're not going to be allowed to do when we get out. But I think there is that pent up feeling that we need to reestablish our normal ways. And this has really driven home to me what's important in life, and that is people, it's family, it's friends, and so I think there will be a large amount of travellers who are wanting to reconnect with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll be a lot more grateful for connection in our life.
Now, as we were saying, obviously Australia is going to be one of the first destinations that's going to open up, or the first destination for us. So for people who love international travel but are now going to be seeing Australia, what do you guys think? What are the destinations? What are the experiences that they can have out there that are going to sort of fill that void for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, people go traveling for a number of different reasons, and whether it's being active and, food experiences or meeting local cultures, you can do that in Australia as well. There's so many great hikes, there's stunning beaches. The local produce that we have around Australia is incredible. And the stories and the people that you can meet in lots of different areas is almost like going to different countries and hearing their individual stories. So I think there'll be a lot of that sort of travel within Australia as well.
Yeah. What do you think, Rob? What's going to be big for people?
I think it's one of those things that if you think about it, almost you can almost recreate any travel experience in Australia in some form or another. So, for example, I've never skied. I'm quite a keen skier. I try and do a ski trip every year, but I've never skied in Australia. So depending on how this pans out, that might be an opportunity for me to do that for the first time. And I think the unique thing that Australia has is just this wilderness that, for example, potentially a lot of European countries don't have to the same degree that we have. So somewhere I would love to get back to is the Kimberley. I've sailed past it from a distance. I've never really explored it. And there are just vast swathes of Australia that are like that, where you can, really immerse yourself in a pretty unique landscape with some definitely unique stories and history to it. So I'm hoping that I'll certainly be doing that. And I hope that other people really take the opportunity to indulge in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those particularly those remote isolated areas, that's going to be pretty attractive to people when they get out of this. And for so many of us, we spend so much time in our homes now, to be able to go out into nature and get back in touch with that is going to be really, really important. Do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in Hobart at the moment, and I really, having lived overseas for a number of years, I haven't had the time to kind of explore Tasmania. So I'm actually really excited about going like hiking in the remote southwest, or going to like Flinders Island or something like that. I think there's a lot to explore that we kind of leave to the last minute because we think it's always going to be there.
Yeah, for sure. And Rob, you were mentioning Uluru was going to be high on your list as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was a very reluctant sort of participant to Uluru. I mean, when I first came over to Australia and I was backpacking around with my girlfriend, she just kept going on and on about going to Uluru. And I was like, really? Like, we know what it looks like. We've seen it on a billion postcards. It's quite expensive to get to. And I was blown away when I got there. There's definitely a sort of a spiritualness about that place that I wasn't expecting. But that was 20 years ago now. So I'm dying to get back there and see it again and see the Field of Light installation and all the various different things they've done since I was back. So even revisiting places that I first backpacked around and seeing it through that new lens of this now being my home rather than me being a sort of a tourist, I think it'd be really interesting to see that difference.
Yeah, for sure. For me, I think coastal Western Australia has a really strong attraction. I've spent a little bit of time over there, but not nearly enough. It doesn't matter where you drive. You start in Perth, you go north and you go through sort of Kalbarri and up to Exmouth and Ningaloo Reef, or you go south and you go through Margaret River and down to Denmark and then over to Esperance. There's so many remote and beautiful places there that are just begging to be explored, really. And that's something that I'm super excited about getting back into as soon as we're allowed to. Is it the memory of fresh seafood and wine along Croatia's coast? The sight of Cuba's colourful classic cars? Or the smiles on the faces of local Nepalese villagers that have you longing to return to your favourite holiday destination? The answer is different for everyone. But when travel bans are lifted, more people than ever will be ready to set off and revisit their favourite places. And with trips in over 100 countries, Intrepid Travel will help you find your new favourite destination. It's never too soon to start dreaming about your next adventure. Visit intrepidtravel.com for inspiration today. Sarah, you mentioned the Tasman bubble. Where that's a great hope of mine, is that we can explore New Zealand as well as Australia. New Zealand's such an amazing destination. Rob, I know you've spent loads of time over there. You, for some reason, have a Kiwi passport, which I don't quite understand. where in New Zealand are you thinking about heading?
Yeah, I actually used to be a tour guide in New Zealand in, I think it was 2006, so around the North and South Island. So I love New Zealand. I was over there in February just recently for a hiking and yoga retreat, which was amazing. But there's just such a vast amount of things to do.
That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's amazing. there's so many different things to do across New Zealand. You can, go hiking in the South Island or wine tasting, or even up on the North Island, like the Coromandel Peninsula, Waiheke Island. I feel like the Kiwis keep all of these things, a secret, but now we're going to be able to get in there and discover them.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ideal country for a road trip as well, isn't it? The roads are so well maintained and the scenery is so beautiful, and everything is, for Australians, everything is so close together that you can very easily put together a really memorable, great road trip.
Absolutely. And I think New Zealand's just done an incredible job with its tourism industry. If you think of all the things they've managed to do for such a small country in such a remote location. So, I mean, their lodges, for example, are world leading, places like Carey Cliffs and Hooker Lodge. And, they have a really quite unique proposition with those. They've done a great job with their cycle tracks, where they've converted all these old railways into cycleways. And they've got amazing local produce. My dad lives in Auckland, as my sister. So I spend a fair bit of time going over there. And it's often quite difficult when you've got family somewhere, because you tend to just sort of obviously stay with them and see them. And so I'm really conscious to try and get out and do something new each time that I go down there. So I remember a few years ago, I went down to Stewart Island, which I hadn't been to before, which is right down off the south tip of the South Island. And that's got this unique species of kiwis that are sort of diurnal. They're in the day and they're also around at night. So
I feel like there's a joke about kiwis here that I'm just going to avoid.
see how I'm baiting you now? I'm just waiting for you to step in.
Trying to cause an international incident here.
Exactly, and make a comment. So yeah, that will be, in that sense, I'm certainly not unhappy that New Zealand's probably going to be the first overseas destination we're going to be able to get to.
Yeah, if there's one bad thing I can say about New Zealand, is that it's too good. It's too attractive. It's too well done. I really want to get over there and do so much over there. And I think to myself, no, like, stay in Australia, do Australian things, let's explore more of this country. But New Zealand is so perfectly well set up to just get over there and in 2 weeks, bam, hit a bunch of amazing spots and do some really incredible things and meet so many great people. It's really hard to turn that down.
Well, you can do it first in Tassie. You can kind of step outside of Australia, do Tassie, and then go across to New Zealand.
This is very true. Across the other ditch.
Yeah.
And that's actually, Tassie is definitely somewhere that I've only been to Tassie two or three times, I think. And I loved it down there. It was really, and like Mona, I remember the first time I went to Mona, the Museum of New and Old Art, like old and new art even. I'm really not into contemporary art at all. And that was by far the most engaging museum that I have ever been to. So I would go back to Hobart just to see that again, plus all the other incredible stuff you've got down there. So it's, and that feels like a sort of an overseas trip, doesn't it? You're sort of, getting on a ferry or a plane some way. So it's sort of like a first step.
For sure. Yeah. And tell us about wine and whiskey down there as well, Sarah. There's some great stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All of the little boutique wineries and whiskey places popping up. It's pretty cool. So you can kind of go around and do tastings, and it's usually the people who are making it, actually they're giving you the tasting. So it's a really awesome experience.
Yeah, right. And I think that's a reason so many people travel overseas now, is for food and wine and that sort of scene. And so to have Tasmania, which as you say, it's like this sort of self-enclosed little bubble that you can go and check out, which does have amazing food, does have amazing wineries, and you get to meet all these interesting characters. That's going to be huge for me. That's something I can't wait to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been interesting the last couple of weeks. We've been reimagining our Intrepid trips domestically and kind of what our customers are going to want when they can only travel within Australia. And yeah, it's pretty exciting to think some of the awesome experiences that we are going to be able to do. And going back and really supporting the local community and, you know, local producers and, you know, people who relied so heavily on international tourism. So I think that's really exciting for me, sort of putting together new programs and, yeah, supporting the locals.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that actually, like going on a tour in Australia with Australians. To me, that sounds great. You know, Australians are really good to travel with. There's a little bit of cultural cringe among some people. You know, you hear the accent when you're overseas and you're like, oh, do we really sound like that? But you know, whenever I'm on a tour and I find that there's some fellow Australians on there, I tend to think, you know, cool, we're going to get on. We understand each other. These people are going to have fun. And so to travel around our own backyard with similar-minded people, I reckon that's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Intrepid's not your standard type of tour. So, you know, we'll come up with some quirky, fun ways to experience Australia as well.
Now, let's talk about dreams. Let's talk about, you know, a time when the world completely opens up and we really do have our choice of places to go. Where do you think about going? Where's your real passion? Rob, you've said Latin America for you is a big passion point.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I should be now on my way to Costa Rica, and I was about to do a cruise from Costa Rica through Panama to Colombia, and then I was going to spend like 3 weeks in Colombia hanging out there. So that is definitely something I hope I can recreate next year. I went to Colombia for the first time last year, and that's one of those countries that, you know, people have a lot of perceptions about before they've been there, and I loved it. I really loved it. And I was going to go to Cuba after that for the first time. So that's a whole part of the world which I really want to spend some more time in. So that would be, yeah, that'll definitely be a priority for me, is getting back to South America.
Yeah, right. And Sarah, you mentioned the Galapagos, which is over in that same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite places. It's just this really unique ecosystem, and it kind of would be a great place to go once we're allowed back out of the country, because it's like a world away, and the animals kind of come up to you as if, you know, they're not afraid of you at all. So, you know, they have no idea of what kind of happened in the last couple of months. So I think, back in Galapagos would be an amazing first experience out of Australia again.
Yeah, I imagine such a fragile ecosystem is probably going to be one of the last places to open back up to tourists. Do you think that's a fair assumption?
Yeah. Yep. It absolutely could be. Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah, you also mentioned Argentina, which is one of my favorite countries in the world as well. It's kind of like Europe meets Southeast Asia in a completely different continent. It's kind of got that sort of romantic classicism combined with the sort of insanity that you get in Latin America. What is it about Argentina that you want to get back to?
Yeah, I think Argentina is one of my favorite countries for sure. I backpacked South America probably about 15 years ago now. But Argentina was, it's so diverse. You've kind of got Mendoza with the wine region, and then you go across to Buenos Aires, and yeah, you've got that European style culture, but mixed in with Latin America, sort of tango and great steaks and wine. And then down to south, I mean, why not pop over to Antarctica while you're there?
Why not? It's close.
These are our dreams. We might as well discover it. I found the only thing about Buenos Aires is I feel incredibly unfashionable whenever I'm there. Everyone is very well dressed. And if you rock up there in your travel chic, having just come back from Antarctica or something, you feel very, very unfashionable.
Yeah. And I think Mendoza, if you've been there, is probably the city with the most good looking people I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I would say Rio would give that a good strong run for its money, actually.
Yeah.
I've been compiling a small Excel spreadsheet about this, and I think Rio is currently my number one for the most attractive race of people.
But Rob, in terms of destinations, you also mentioned Africa, South Africa and East Africa. So I totally agree. I'm 100% on board because of that getting back to nature sort of thing. And those are kind of experiences, those safari experiences, I think, which aren't going to have changed at all once we're allowed back out there, are they?
I hope not, yeah. And it'd be interesting to say, I guess I hadn't really thought a lot about that, your point just recently about the Galapagos and how those countries with those precious sort of ecosystems manage all of this, because understandably, they're going to be more nervous about letting travelers back in. And so I really hope that's possible, that we are able to get back to those places sort of sooner rather than later. But yeah, if I could only do one more trip in my lifetime, it would be hands down a safari to Africa. I just think that anticipation of getting on a jeep in the morning and having no idea what you're going to see, just plus that landscape of where you are and the smells and the sounds, is just intoxicating. So that would be, yeah, that would be very high. And there's just a million places to do it there as well, in South Africa or Kenya or Botswana, Tanzania. So there's a lot of options, and I'd love to get back.
you say safari and it sounds like it's going to be a similar experience every time, but it's not. Mm. It's totally different depending on which country you're in, depending on what day you're, depending on what season, you know, totally. Everything is different.
Your outfit. I mean, there's a lot of factors at play. I have a whole range of hats and canes and all sorts of things that really spice it up.
Safari hats with the little thingy on the top. And I can imagine.
You've seen the photos.
Yeah. Because you take quite a few. Sarah, you mentioned Sri Lanka. That's what draws you back there.
Yeah, I went to Sri Lanka a couple of years ago and actually did a cycling tour around Sri Lanka and another yoga Ayurvedic retreat. So I think that's so diverse across Sri Lanka, and the people are so friendly. They've been through so much and, you know, just really lovely people. And I mean, who doesn't want curry for breakfast?
I am 100% with you. And I feel like Rob is possibly a recent convert to this as well.
I am totally. I mean, if you told me that 2 months ago I'd be having curry and tea for breakfast, I would have bet a large sum of money against that. But I was in Sri Lanka when this was sort of kicked off, and I just literally got out before all the sort of lockdown started, and I loved it. I, for exactly the reasons you say, Sarah, the diversity of the amazing coastline, plus all the tea plantations, a lot of great history there, and the people were amazing. But the food. I mean, food isn't normally high on my list of reasons to travel, but that was a real revelation. And my spice threshold went from being like a sort of newborn baby to being sort of toddler. So I definitely feel like I'm making some advances up the spice scale. But it was great. It was really, really good. I loved it there.
Did you have egg hoppers?
I had egg hoppers, yeah, for breakfast every day. And dals, and there was one mutton curry in particular which left me a sort of a crying wreck, which I'll never forgive. But it's sort of deceptive, isn't it? You sort of take a little bite, you think, oh, I think it's okay, and then you take a big sort of spoonful, and then suddenly you're on the floor in the fetal position, just sort of wailing. But yeah, I thought the food was sensational, really delicious.
I'm surprised that it's not better known worldwide, Sri Lanka. The food is so good there. It's so tasty. There's so much flavor that they manage to coax out of often just vegetables and rice. It's really impressive. And I was, you know, from the cheapest little place that you go into, and they serve up the short eats, the little deep fried things. And you usually get a banquet where you just get a pile of rice and then stick a couple of curries on top of that. And it's just so good.
Totally. Yeah, I think that is that really, it was one of those places I was excited about going to, but when I got there, it really, really blew me away. And also, I think it's somewhere where, and I probably thought this, that people think it's a bit like a sort of a diet India, you know, it's like a sort of an India light, not quite as confronting. And it certainly isn't as confronting, but it's also a completely different country, and it's a different culture, different language. You know, there's a lot of things which are very different about Sri Lanka to India. So it'd be easy to sort of dismiss it and think, oh, if I've been to India, then I don't need to go to Sri Lanka. But I would definitely give it another chance.
Yeah, for sure. Sarah, do you think post-lockdown, is that going to be a good time to start visiting places that have maybe been suffering from a bit of over-tourism in the past? You know, is that a good time to get to Venice, to get to Barcelona, to get to Dubrovnik before everybody else arrives?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a balance that needs to happen there. So there's a balance of kind of going back and supporting places, but it could be a really great opportunity to actually make sure that we're not traveling in the same way that we used to travel, because things like over-tourism are such a problem for certain places like Venice like Iceland, for example. So I think it's a good opportunity to kind of go outside of some of those big tourist spots, because some of the treks, you know, you think Everest Base Camp, it's an amazing trek. I've done it myself. But there's so many great treks around that area. So get out there and really support all of the different villages.
Yeah, it's difficult to strike a balance, isn't it? Because I was talking about San Sebastian, and when I was living there, you know, it's suffering from over-tourism. In summer, there are too many people there. The streets are absolutely packed in the old town. You can't move, and locals don't go there anymore, which is a really sad thing. And you see, you know, graffiti scrawled in some places that say "tourists go home" or "no more hotels" and stuff like that, which I totally understand. But now the total opposite. You know, there's this total absence of tourists. They're crying out for people to go and visit there. So there's a balance to be struck there. I'm not sure how we're going to do that.
What I'm sort of hoping on that front is that this time will give those places a bit of a breathing space to reevaluate that stuff. So I guess, you know, when you're Venice and you're just besieged by tourists all the time, you don't have that opportunity to step back and think about how to better manage this. Whereas now they do. And so hopefully the people that are in charge of those things are making those decisions can sort of think about, well, how can we manage this when the borders do open up better? What can we do to make sure that we don't end up in the same situation that we did before? So I'm hoping those people are having those sorts of discussions right now.
And I think as well, Rob, I think that's a really great point. And I think then from the other side, so the actual customer who's traveling, I think people will realize that travel is a privilege and will kind of be grateful for the fact that they can go to these amazing places. So hopefully it kind of, rebalances a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Good guys, is there any particular experiences that you've been missing in travel and that you can't wait to get back to? I know going into nature, into the wild is going to be a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to go out into the wilderness and do some hiking, but restaurants, definitely get back into connecting with people. And I'm a sailor, so I can't wait to get back out on the water again.
There's loads of things. I really miss that feeling of walking around a new city, you know, and your very first time you get to a place and everything's unfamiliar and you don't really know where you're going. And then that gradual sort of familiarity that creeps up on you when you're there for 2 days or 3 days, you think, oh, hang on, like, oh yeah, I recognize that cafe, or yeah, I walked past that place before. And I love that sort of progression of someone just feeling so foreign to feeling like it's sort of like a home. So that I miss. And I just miss being foreign places, being surrounded by different accents and smells and sounds and just the unfamiliarity of all that. I think that heightens your senses and your sense of being alive like nothing else does when everything you look at or touch or sense is sort of foreign. So I'm really looking forward to getting back. And then finally getting back out into nature. I think there's great opportunities to do that back in Australia, but also overseas and the US national parks and lots of places in Europe, and just going to some of those really awe-inspiring, spectacular landscapes that we have dotted around the world.
Yeah, I think people are really sort of understanding how lucky we are and how important that is now that we've had that taken away. Guys, unfortunately, we are running out of time, so I'm going to leave you with one last question to wrap it up. If you could be anywhere in the world right now doing anything, where and what would that be? Rob, I'm going to throw to you first.
Oh, man, you'd love to chuck these ones right at the end, don't you? Just to really keep us on our toes. Where would I like to be? I would like to be rafting down a river somewhere in, let's say, America. So I want to be on some multi-day rafting trip. It's day three. We are miles away from civilization. I've got no internet, no Wi-Fi, and I'm surrounded by spectacular scenery with a good group of people. Having the time of my life.
Sounds pretty good to me. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, I might join Rob. That sounds pretty good.
there's space on the raft, Sarah. Hop in.
I'll be doing that. Or I think hearing about your time in Spain, Ben, it's, I would love to be in Spain just eating tapas, and it's kind of coming into summer there. I love that time where it's sort of coming, changing seasons in Europe. So, yeah, maybe just cruising around Spain somewhere.
Sounds pretty good. For me, I would like to sort of recreate actually one of the experiences I've had recently. During the time that I was living in Spain, we did a quick trip over to Morocco, to Tangier, and I loved Tangier. It was such an amazing, cosmopolitan, interesting city. And we stayed in the Casbah there in a really old house with a rooftop. And one of the most amazing experiences was standing up there on the rooftop at sunset and listening to the call to prayer ringing out from all the mosques that were around us, and, you know, watching the sunset and looking over the water where you can see Spain over the other side of the water. And yet you can see this very much African, Middle Eastern, Arabic city around us. And for me, that's what travel's all about. It's that feeling of being somewhere so different and foreign and yet, you know, feeling that you're a little bit a part of it. So that's where I would go.
Right. We'll meet you there after the rafting trip. That's where we'll go.
Yeah, right. You're going rafting. You're not invited. Well, Rob and Sarah, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. It's been great to chat.
Thank you, Ben.
No problem, mate.
And if you would like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Don't forget to rate and review if you would like to do that. And also you can dig into our back catalog and check out plenty of old episodes that cover all experiences of travel that are out there. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter, we're TravelerAU, or on Facebook, also TravelerAU, or you can send us an email, editorial@traveler.com.au. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy. Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flight of Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by LapFam. And our digital editor at traveler.com.au is Craig Platt.